You're listening to View from the Couch, a podcast about TV, movies, DVD, and just about anything from parents with children. And now, your hosts, Kent and Michelle.
Hello there, and welcome to View from the Couch for Wednesday, June 22nd. It is officially summer now. One day of summer so far. And actually nice and hot in our part of the world. Gotta love it. The rain stopped just in time. I hope it stays away. It's supposed to be a hot one this year, and so I'm hoping for that. And I know that some parts of the world have already had lots of heat. So, that's what summer's for. It's gotta be nice and hot, and you gotta burn your skin a few times and, you know, have some burn treatments. You know, I don't know. I'm just being dumb. I'm not afraid of the sun. I'm not afraid. Bring it on. Bring it on. I don't even use that much sunscreen. I'm a bad girl. I don't know. I'm just old school. And lazy. Can I say that too? Sure, why not? So anyway, this week we came across an interesting documentary series from the National Geographic Channel called Ultimate Factories. And it's kind of a cool series. We've only watched one so far. It premiered in 2007, though, so it's been around a while. We're a little behind the times. It was produced by Michael Hoff Productions and National Geographic Film and Television. It explores the inside workings of various factories worldwide, which, you know, sounds kind of dull, but you'd be surprised, actually. Each episode profiles the machinery and manpower behind each factory's main product, featuring close-ups, breakdowns, interviews, side stories, and kind of shows a sequence of events in order to show the process in the factory. So from rough, raw goods to finished product. So the one that the kids and I watched this week was called Ultimate Factories Coke. Coca-Cola. I'm telling you, it was funny. By halfway through, we had to stop it and the kids had to have a Coke because seriously, watching all that Coke go by, it makes you feel like you need to have one. So, I will start off with that recommendation. If you're going to watch this episode, have a glass of Coke handy. So I interviewed the kids about it and here's what they had to say. So here I am with Emily and Connor, and they want to talk a little bit about the Coke factory video that we watched. And so, Connor, what was the most interesting thing you learned from the video?
Well, I liked how it shows you quite a bit about how Coke is made, and it's really cool. And I don't know how you couldn't watch that video without saying, "It's so cool!"
So the most interesting thing you learned is that Coke is cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Imagine that it's made all over the world, and yeah, it's really cool. And
made
everyone
all over
the world pretty much can drink it.
Yes. That was one statistic we learned. 99% of the world's population has access to Coke products.
Oh,
that's insane.
It's insane.
Okay, Emily, what was the most interesting thing you learned?
The most interesting thing I learned was that all the machines that do it, all the things that make it, all the people that do it. The process is very interesting and that they do it so fast.
Yeah.
Like, it's so fast. It goes by so fast. Instead, like, more than 2.100 billion cans of Coke are made each day, I think they said. So
yeah.
That really amazed me.
Something like that number, anyway. The machines move the cans and the bottles and stuff along the conveyor belts very quickly, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah, that
do.
Was very cool. Then, in a lot of cases, they had to slow it down in slow motion so that we could actually see what was happening because it went so fast. So do you think this is a video that other kids your age would enjoy watching?
Oh yeah.
Especially
lots.
People that love to drink Coke. I think they'd really find this
interesting.
It
would make you drool.
Do you think kids younger than you would find it interesting?
Maybe. Or maybe they would sleep through the whole thing.
I think 10 and up should watch it because there are some words kids might not understand. And also because the
like, there's a lot of talking and
right, that
a lot
can
of
be boring.
Stuff that can be confusing or boring to them.
Very good point. All right, well, thanks, guys, for being with us on the show today, and we'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Some good insights. You know, they're getting a little better at this whole interviewing thing. As they get older, you know, they're starting to get the hang of it, I think. So, there was a few other things I wanted to mention about it. I'm just going to find this here. So first, some backstory on coke. Most people know that it's found in more than 200 countries, which is crazy. I think I mentioned that in the interview with the kids. 90% or 99% of the world's population has access to coke products. It's old. It's been around since the 19th century. It was a patent medicine at the time, and the patent was invented by John Pemberton. Coca-Cola was bought out by businessman Asa Griggs Candler, and he brought it to world dominance, basically, throughout the 20th century by very, I guess, auspicious marketing tactics, if you will. The company produces a concentrate, and the way that this particular plant that we observed worked, it was in the southern states. The bottles and the cans and, well, actually, they don't use any bottles anymore in North America. They did highlight a plant in Brazil as well, and that's where they use the bottles, more so in the rest of the world, but not really in North America at all anymore, the glass bottles. So that was kind of interesting. So the plants in North America only use the cans and the plastic bottles. So they did talk a little bit about how those are made, like the manufacturing process for the plastic and the metal, and then or aluminum, if you will. And then the empty cans or end bottles are shipped to the bottling plant where they produce from the concentrate. They add sweetener and water and then fill the bottles. So it's a kind of a two-step process, and two separate factories were involved in that process. And then they talked about the metal or the glass bottles that are produced in Brazil. It was in Brazil, I think I mentioned that. It was interesting process to watch because they showed how they make new bottles, and they also showed how they use old and recycle the bottles, and the whole washing process and sterilizing them and that sort of a thing. So I guess that's pretty much, you know, everybody knows about coke. But if you're interested, you can check out the show itself, and it's kind of a cool one. So, moving on to a little bit of couch entertainment news. So, first of all, we want to talk about the weekend box office. Weekend of June 17th. Green Lantern doing okay, but it's not getting great reviews, which is kind of too bad, I guess. But it is it did okay this last weekend. Made $53.717 million in North America this over the weekend. Super 8 a little bit behind at $21.47 million, but their gross so far is at $73 million, so they're cooking right along. Number 3 for the box office last week was Mr. Popper's Penguins. Followed by X-Men First Class, The Hangover Part 2, Kung Fu Panda 2, Bridesmaids, Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, Midnight in Paris, Judy Moody and the Not Bummer Summer rounds out the top 10. And that is one that kind of flew under the radar for me. And now I'm kind of thinking it looks interesting, and I think we should take the kids to that, actually. Interesting movement. The movies pretty much stayed in the same order for the most part and just slotted in Green Lantern and Mr. Popper's Penguins. But otherwise, they were in almost the exact same order last week, which is interesting. Although Pirates fell from number 5 to number 8, but it's been out a few while now. 5 weeks out already, so, you know, that makes sense. But Bridesmaids is holding on, taking the place above Pirates, and it's been out for 6 weeks. So, what does that say about that movie? I don't know. Kind of interesting. Also coming out this weekend is Cars 2. And I think we've mentioned a little bit about Cars 2 in the past weeks, but it takes the two sort of head cars, if you will, or the more popular ones, into Europe. And so they're kind of on a road trip. Lightning McQueen and Mater, the tow truck, they end up in Japan, Italy, and England. They're in competing in the World Grand Prix. So it sounds like a made-up one, actually. But anyways, they get sidetracked by international espionage, and Lightning McQueen still trying to win the race, but he's not getting all the help he needs from Mater, who's distracted. But it sounds like it'll be kind of an interesting plot. It is the second Pixar film to have a sequel. Toy Story was the first. John Lasseter directed this one, and is the first he's directed since he did the first Cars movie. So that's kind of a interesting thing. I guess he likes the Cars series. The soundtrack's kind of cool. It's scored by Michael Giacchino. He also did The Incredibles and Ratatouille and Up. And it's got some interesting tracks on the title. On the soundtrack there's some Weezer, some country, of course. You gotta throw in the country when you're thinking about the Cars movies. Brad Paisley does a few. And then it looks like there's most of the rest of it is Michael Giacchino's work. So, but you never know. Might be kind of a good one. Also in Couch Entertainment news, there's another little movie opening up on Friday. It's actually a documentary called Conan O'Brien Can't Stop. It sounds kind of interesting. A little over a year ago, Conan O'Brien was booted from the late-night talk show job he'd been given on The Tonight Show because NBC executives weren't happy with his ratings and they weren't willing to give him a chance to build his audience, which was kind of not nice of them. So anyway, his the booting out came with the arrangement that said he couldn't appear on television for 6 months following his departure. So he decided to take his show on the road for a 32-city tour called Legally Prohibited from Being Funny on Television Tour. It sounded like it was probably quite hilarious. He had a full band, including backup singers. He performed songs, did comedy bits across the country. I imagine this was across the U.S. And he often involved friends who were in the city that he happened to be in, which included everyone from Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert to Jim Carrey. And that tour was documented by filmmaker Rodman Flender. And the result is called Conan O'Brien Can't Stop. And it's going to be in theaters this Friday. So it sounds like that might be kind of a good one to check out if you are a Conan O'Brien fan at all. The other thing we wanted to... I keep saying we. It's so lonely on the couch. I wanted to quickly talk about some of the top movies that have been in the past. I know we've mentioned before that Jaws was the first officially called summer movie, and it came out in 1975, made over $7 million in its opening weekend, and of course made everybody scared to go to the beach just in time for summer. Gotta love it. But summer movies aren't just films, they're events, and so they take over pop culture. And so if it's a good one, it can influence a lot of what happens after it. They're the ones, the summer movies that made some sort of an impact, whether they were breaking box office records or they came up with a brilliant marketing campaign. And that is how the top 50 summer movies were determined. They had to fit that criteria. So maybe we'll just highlight number 41 through 50 this week. So not the top of the top, but, you know, some of the better ones. Number 50 is Pearl Harbor, which is one I have not seen yet. Maybe I'll have to, check that one out. 49 is Signs. And, that doesn't surprise me. Signs succeeded where Pearl Harbor dropped the ball. They had evocative poster design and effective teasers. And, of course, Shyamalan is great at that kind of thing. He gets people frothing with anticipation, but it was also a movie that held up to what the hype was on it. And so that is why Signs was number 49. Number 48 is Braveheart. Well, of course, that goes without saying. Braveheart was just an awesome movie through and through. It had a good storyline, it had lots of action, it had fight scenes, it had guys wearing makeup. What more can you ask for? Number 47 is Predator from way back in 87. Number 46, Poltergeist. Not one I think I did actually end up seeing that, although I didn't necessarily want to. Yeah, I guess I did see that one. So Poltergeist is number 46. Number 45, Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me. Yes, well, good old Austin Powers. Can't say I liked the second one as much as the first one. Number 44, Gremlins, back in 1984. That was a movie that made an impact on me. I think, you know, when you're in junior high, high school sort of age, those kind of movies hit home a little more. I don't know. I find the older I get, the more jaded I am, and the less things have an impact on me, really. So, yeah. Star Wars Episode III, Revenge of the Sith, comes in at number 43. Well, it was, of course, the best of the prequel trilogy. The first two were... ugh. Yeah, seriously. but the third one wasn't too bad. It, you know, there was some decent acting, and it was the link between the first three and the last three, so it tied up some loose ends, and so that was a half-decent one. Number 42, Superman Returns. Came out in 2006. You know, it is a good film. It's, Christopher Reeve kind of comes through in Brandon Routh's performance, which was kind of brilliant of him to do in a way. And so it kind of was reminiscent of movies that have come before it, and that was probably a good thing and probably helped it in the long run, in my opinion anyway. Others would disagree, I'm sure. Number 41, the last of the tops that we will discuss this week, South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. Not really my favorite. It's a cartoon that's rude. It really has nothing going for it, in my opinion. But some of those were good. Like I said, you know, Gremlins was a good one. That was probably my favorite of those. So, in sadder news, the death of Ryan Dunn this last week in a car accident. Not that I was a huge fan, and not that he'd really had a massively crazy career or anything, but it is kind of sad. Maybe you hadn't heard. I believe he starred maybe wrote Jackass, the movie, and then was also in another movie that was based on his life. And he played himself in that one, and it was called... I don't remember. It was called something else. But anyway, he sounded like he'd had kind of a wild life anyway, so... it's kind of accident-prone, is kind of what I mean. But it's still sad. And sad because he was young and talented, and now he is gone. Anyway, I think that's about it for entertainment news for this week. My one last thing I wanted to quickly mention, my boss at work recommended a comedian to us, to me, and it's called, his name's Russell Peters. He's a Canadian, but he's of Indian descent, and the show that she recommended to me and that I ended up watching was called Red, White, and Brown, and you've seen it yourself. It has its moments that are not so child-friendly. Most, I'd say all of it is not child-friendly, but some of it's not even adult-friendly, some of it. But he also is very funny, and he does an awesome, awesome Indian accent, and he also does a very good Chinese accent. And he's smart, you know, and that's the kind of comedy that's interesting to watch, when someone can get up there and talk about things that that are even a little bit, what's the word? Educational. he seems to have traveled a lot, and he seems to know a lot about different nationalities, or he's, you know, made a point of getting to know a lot about different cultures. And so it's actually somewhat educational at the same time as funny and a little bit cringeworthy. But if you're looking for a good laugh and you don't mind a little, stand-up nasty humor that comes out in probably most stand-up shows, check out Russell Peters' Red, White, and Brown. And that's it for this week. I hope you are all having a wonderful first week of summer, and that you are enjoying the hot sun and getting a good tan. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to View from the Couch, a DVD Verdict podcast. View from the Couch is available exclusively on DVDverdict.com. Watch for new episodes every week. Thanks for your continued support. Kent and Michelle appreciate it. Be sure to visit DVDverdict.com for the latest in DVD and theatrical release reviews, DVD release information, talent interviews, event coverage, and much, much more.